Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to Blog Talk Radio's Find Yourself, Live Your Dreams, and Be Happy. I'm your host, Yvonne Brown, coming to you live from Chicago, Illinois, on the second Saturday of each month. Find Yourself, Live Your Dreams, and Be Happy is an interactive live internet talk radio show that focuses on how to take advantage of the opportunities that life sends your way. The program explores obstacles overcome by ordinary people with extraordinary results and what inspires or motivates them to take positive actions that make their dreams a reality. I know a little about that myself as I've had 10 careers. I started out as a fashion model, then I was a rock and roll singer, a corporate consultant, an adjunct professor for 3 universities, and today I'm a professional speaker, author, coach, blogger, and radio show host. Let's set the tone for today's program. Napoleon Hill said, "First comes thought, then organization of that thought into ideas and into plans, then transformation of those plans into reality. The beginning, as you will observe, is in your own imagination." Today's show is brought to you by BudgetPreneur.com. If you find that you have little money to invest in your business and still need to get things done, stop putting them off. Go to BudgetPreneur.com. They provide the resources and tools to help you manage your business, save money, and increase revenue. Visit www.BudgetPreneur.com and become a member today. All right, let's get started. By the way, if you're listening online and you call in to ask a question, please mute your computer first. The number to call in is 646-381-4198. So we have a fantastic guest and a fantastic show for you today. Our topic is the art of continuous transformation. Alvin Toffler in Future Shock said, "The illiterate of the 21st century will not be those who cannot read or write, but those who cannot continually learn, unlearn, and relearn." As we all know, these days, change is continuous. However, most people, especially those of us older than 30, can find the pace of change challenging. Many think the ability to change, adapt, and transform deteriorates with age, leading us to believe the old adage, quote, "You can't teach an old dog new tricks," end quote. Many of us have discovered that this simply is not true. Continuous transformation refers to having a fluid ability to intentionally choose which belief systems and bodies of knowledge you want to hold on to and which you want to let go of or upgrade. When it comes to upgrading or changing, there's a very specific process you need to understand and employ to make the change stick. Learning this process is essential to surviving and thriving in the increasingly volatile an opportunity-filled future that we find ourselves confronting today. And by the end of today's show, you're going to walk away with these things. You're going to better understand why change is difficult for some people. You're going to know how to approach the decision of how and when and why to make a change. You'll have a goal-setting system that works for you and an understanding of where the emotional resistance to change comes from and what to do about it. Our guest, Rob Hambleton, is going to tell you about it. Let me tell you about him. Rob Hambleton graduated from the University of Utah with his MBA in 1984. From 84 to 2001, he worked for Ford Motor Company, Eastman Kodak, Dell Computer, in the areas of manufacturing, product design, logistics, sales, and marketing, primarily in the capacity of finance director and later project manager. Drawing from this deep and broad financial career, Rob left Dell in 2001 and started his own training, coaching, and consulting business called Soul Canyon Training and Development, LLC, in Austin, Texas. Then in 2002, he moved to Oregon to be closer to his family and work on a project to start an organic farmers cooperative, which is still in operation today, which that's amazing. And in 2003, he took on the role of project manager for the Williams Education Coalition, a rural community development project, as well as functioning as business manager for a nonprofit human services organization from 2004 to 6. In addition to offering programs for the Power Up Workforce Development Program in Southern Oregon and offering Soul Canyon programs throughout the Pacific Northwest, he currently teaches over 50 Fred Pryor career track seminar titles including Excel and PowerPoint, finance, speed reading, communication, leadership, and many, many more. He's an author and created a program, a DVD, audio, and MP3 program called Financially Speaking, The Keys to Unlocking the Language of Business. He lives in Oregon with his wife Mary and his son Wesley, and you can learn more about him at soulcanyon.com after we complete our broadcast. Welcome, Rob.
Well, thanks for having me, Yvonne. This is going to be very exciting. Love talking about this stuff.
I do too. So the first thing that came to my mind was, why do older people find it generally more difficult to learn new things and accept change?
Well, it's kind of interesting. We both work in the contract training arena, and I think we have lots of opportunities to see, you know, how different types of people deal with a specific kind of change, and that is trying to learn something new. I think most of us can relate to a couple of things. I mean, when I teach, I teach a number of Microsoft topics, most exclusively almost is Microsoft Excel. And I think most people can remember when Microsoft fundamentally changed the way that those programs work in terms of the way you get at functionality. There's not a single person that I've ever talked to who doesn't say that their initial reaction to the way, not only back in 2007 that Microsoft made the change to those programs, but basically any time Microsoft makes a change, that their initial reaction is, what would you guess, Yvonne? What do you think the initial reaction would be to that change?
I don't like it. I like the way it works now.
Yeah, where did my stuff go? Where did you put my stuff? I mean, regardless,
I can't find anything.
Yeah, I can't, and it's taking me now longer to do something that I'd learned how to do in the old way. So I don't think anybody, right in the beginning, whenever there's a software change with a program as ubiquitous as Microsoft, I don't think there's anyone that I know that doesn't have at least a slight negative reaction to that. I think another thing that people can react to and think about is now there's over 1 billion people in the world that use Facebook. And Facebook makes changes every once in a while. And how do you think most people react to changes that Facebook makes?
I know how I react to it. I get very annoyed,
right?
And I'm very upset because I liked the way it was before. I understood that.
Yeah. you understood where the functionality was. You understood.
Yeah, exactly.
But as you work through the change, I think most people will agree that once they get through it, once they, you know, through fits and starts, get to the point where it's automatic, they understand now why Microsoft put their tools in different places, and it makes more sense now, why Facebook is doing the things that they're doing to put the functionality and organize the functionality to maintain privacy and all that kind of stuff, if they'll just take the time to understand it. But I don't think there's a person in the world that will argue that within things like that, that their first reaction is negative. Now, I think the thing that happens to us is that as we get older, we get more and more things in our brains. We get a bigger and bigger database, if you will. And most of that information that makes its way in and is in our subconscious or unconscious mind is in there, and it wants to stay there. And unless we have a process for when new information comes along, as this database gets bigger and bigger and bigger, as we get older and older and older, there's more and more of a reluctance to take out old things and put in new things just automatically. I mean, it wants to stay there. So I think to answer your first question, Yvonne, I think the big reason that as we get older, we get more resistant to change is we do not have, our database gets bigger and bigger based on life experience and knowledge, but most of us do not have a really good process of keeping the information in there current, of taking out the old programs and putting in new programs, so we make sure that it's always fresh and new. I just think the bigger it gets, the harder it gets to change it.
I completely agree. And, you know, I just returned from teaching some classes on the East Coast, and I have to tell you, I had a, I guess you would call medium older person in the class, a business owner. I think he was, I don't know, maybe late 30s, early 40s. And he, shockingly, just adapted using email. And I shared a couple of things about using Outlook, and he was devastated because he goes, I just learned how to use email. I don't understand technical stuff, you know. And he just kind of froze up like this change was too much for him. And so when we say older people, it can start pretty young. I mean, 40-something
is
older people in a sense.
Yeah, and I think the when we say older people, I think most people would agree that as you get older, it becomes more frequent. But here's what's really going on. When anything that you're trying to bring in, new knowledge or a new career, a new job, if something's foisted upon you or you're trying to learn something new and it comes into conflict or is different than something that's already in there, then you're going to feel that resistance. Then it's going to be there. It's just that as we get older, there are more and more and more things that are already in there to put up resistance to new things. So I think most people get to the point, and this is why I think the adage, you can't teach an old dog new tricks, I think a lot of people get to the point where now there's so much in there that hasn't been cleaned up and cleaned out for a while that everything that comes down the pike that's new is different and in conflict with something that already, whether it's a belief system or old knowledge or old ways of doing email or communicating or, you know, using Windows XP or, you know, whatever it is, it's in conflict with something that's already in there. The core issue is the thing that's coming down, is it or is it not in conflict with something that you already have habituated, learned, as part of your belief system is already in there. That's the key issue.
And so that's probably why they have emotional resistance. Why do they have this emotional resistance to new things?
Well, see, here's the thing. There's one body of knowledge that I really, really like. It's called cognitive therapy. You may have heard it, by Dr. Albert Ellis. When I do contract training, one of my favorite programs to sell is a gentleman that has taken cognitive therapy and actually made it easier to understand in terms of what's going on. The whole idea behind cognitive therapy is something happens on the outside world. Let's call it an external stimuli. You put it through a belief system, and that basically is what drives your emotional reaction to it. And then when you have an emotional reaction, that then drives your behavior. So let's say a bear, you're walking on a path, you see a bear on the path. Most of us would interpret that bear as a threat, and then that would drive the behavior of either, you know, whatever you've learned, whatever's in your database to react to a threat like that, whether it's playing dead, running away, you know, digging out your bear spray, blowing your whistle, you know, whatever it is, you're going to do based on that interpretation. Now, as we go further and further in life and we learn more and more, your brain likes to be efficient. It likes to get a lot of things done. And so when something has been put in as a habit or a shortcut way of evaluating those external stimuli, our brain naturally wants to hold on to it. And so it sees anything new basically as a threat. Now, once your brain, as you know, interprets something as a threat and gets the amygdala involved in your brain, then all those fight or flight chemicals get released, and that was what initially puts up this initial emotional reaction. Once that happens, as I think you well know, your ability to deal rationally with whatever that external stimuli is, whether it's a new way of navigating Microsoft Office or Windows 8 or a change in Facebook, chances aren't very good that your initial reception to that information is going to be a good one. That's where the emotions come from. I mean, your brain wants to execute a program the way it's executed a program in terms of the way you've learned it very, very quickly. Something new comes along that challenges that program and says, hey, you know, there's this new way of doing it. What do you think? Well, the initial reaction is going to be that new thing's a threat because it's going to slow me down. And so when we deal with things like that, we've got to have a very, very kind of one of the initial ways of dealing with changes, we have to have a very, very specific way of dealing with that initial reaction. One other little story. I was just about a month ago in Idaho visiting my dad, and we do fantasy football together. And he was complaining about the speed of his computer. And I went and looked at his computer. I said, Dad, you've had this computer for about 13 years now, and it's running Windows XP, and that's the reason it's so slow, even though you have high-speed Internet. I said, let's take a trip on down to Best Buy and get you another computer. So we did. We went down, spent $350, got a super fast computer, booted it up at home, and up came Windows 8. And what do you think his reaction to it was?
What is that?
What is that? Where did they put my stuff? And I said, Dad, stop. Stop for just a second. look over here, click this little button, and the minute the old desktop came up, the old way, which you can do in Windows 8, the old way of looking at the desktop, you should have seen the expression on his face. It was immense relief.
Relief.
He was relieved. Oh, there's the old way of looking at it. And now once that's gone, he's going to be more free to kind of explore the new way. But what locks most people up and the reason most people do not get around the initial resistance to change and end up walking at some point the same ruts, the same behavioral patterns, the same unupgraded knowledge and belief systems that they get to at a certain point in time is because they simply cannot, as part of job one, get around that initial resistance to something different, regardless of how viable or rationally logical it is in terms of being a better thing.
So what's one thing that we can do to increase our ability to handle change then?
So I kind of problem solve this a little bit. You know, I have my way of saying it, but I always like to come up with better ways of characterizing it. I love that quote you read at the very beginning of our interview that said, "The illiterate of the 21st century will not be those who can't read or write, but those who cannot continually learn, unlearn, and relearn." Now, most people understand the learning curve. You learn a new skill. We do it in school all the time. You practice it. You get down the learning curve, and it gets easier and easier and easier until you make it to where you can basically auto-execute that. That's called turning it into a habit. What not a lot of people understand is the idea of unlearning before you relearn. The whole idea of unlearning, when Alvin Toffler said it, is most people get the idea that if you get an upgraded computer program that you're going to install on your computer, that you can't, if you usually, not always, but usually, if you try to install the new computer program right over the top of the old computer program, what happens?
It fails. It doesn't work.
Yeah, and they're in conflict, right?
It crashes.
The old computer program is trying to run, and the new computer program is trying to run, and they're trying to share computer space or brain space, and it's not effectively at all. Sometimes it will bring the system to a complete halt. System fail, right? What you first have to do is you have to, if you're going to bring in a new computer program, you have to uninstall the old program before you reinstall the new program. Now, the way that works with learning is this, is before you're going to accept something new and build a new set of habits and bring it in, you first have to uninstall the old habits. Now, it's a little bit different when it comes to belief systems or knowledge. What you have to do is you have to bring up the old system, because what you've done is you put it into your subconsciousness or unconsciousness, so you're auto-executing it now. You need to bring up the old thing and say, well, here's the old thing, here's what I was doing, here's how it was working, and that's what I've habituated, and that's what I'm doing so far. Now, here is the new thing. Let's put them side by side in consciousness with the conscious mind. Now, why is the new thing better than the old thing? This is the step trying to make change that they usually don't do. Whether it's big corporations trying to put in new policies or procedures, somebody trying to learn something new, they don't go through the rational process of saying and convincing themselves consciously or other people why the new thing is better than the old thing. You have to go through, you have to say, well, in Microsoft, the new thing is better because the integration of the old menu system with the old toolbars makes much more sense now with the ribbon system, because you get all this functionality in Facebook. The reason we're doing it, and the reason now Facebook goes through a process of explaining why they're doing it, is so people can rationally accept why the new thing is better. Now, once you rationally accept why the new thing is better, you've done the first step of unlearning. Now what you do is you say, okay, here's this part of the old thing that I want to continue to do. Here's this part of the new thing that I want to continue to do. Rationally, this makes sense. This is my new belief system. This is my new knowledge. Now with the new belief system and new knowledge, you simply have to go through getting down the learning curve the way you did with something when it was brand new. What most people skip is the first part of unlearning, which is rationally understanding why the new thing is better than the old thing, whether it's change management in large companies, or whether it's learning a new piece of software, or whether it's do something fundamentally different in the way you do anything in life. You have to go through the why as to why the new thing is better before you're going to accept it and inculcate it. That's a basic part of uninstalling the old program.
That's wonderful. That's an excellent way of putting it. Yes, that's an excellent way of putting it. And I kind of like, I truly enjoy your analogy of comparing it with computer systems, because our brains work just like a computer. So it helps to make sense of what's going on. But then how come we get these things that are called hot buttons? What are those things? How do we get them? Where do we get them from, and what are they?
Right. So most hot buttons, Yvonne, in my experience, have come from really significant emotional experiences we've had when we were very, very young. Let's say, for example, when I was very, very young, my little brother, we lived in a small town, we left my little brother at the grocery store accidentally. Now, that's kind of a big deal, right? We didn't discover it until we were, about 10 minutes away from the grocery store and about 2 minutes away from home. My mom said, "Hey, where's your little brother?" We were all kind of sloshing around the back of the station wagon. You remember those days? I don't know. I mean,
yeah.
That's what we had. We're all sloshing around the back of the station wagon. Yeah. So she says, "Where's your little brother?" And we all looked around and said, "He's not here." And so my mom got freaked out about it. I got freaked out about it, largely as a result of my mom getting freaked out about it. We drove at about 90 miles an hour back to the grocery store, and it turns out that he was just back there talking to the butcher, eating a piece of candy, and everything was okay. Now, I inculcate that experience associated with any external stimuli that relates to a child being out of my sight or becoming aware that one of my kids or somebody that I loved, I don't know where they are, whatever it is. Now I become an adult. And I'm in a store, and really quickly, I look around, and I don't see my five-year-old. Based on that experience, that's going to be a hot-button issue for me, and my initial reaction is going to be to freak out, because I programmed that when I was very, very young, programmed that in there to react at that level when I was very, very young. So all hot-button issues are things that, as a child or when we were very, very young or we had a significant emotional event, we had a reaction to it that now we've inculcated into the habit part of our brain, into the unconscious sense of our subconscious brain, so that when anything like that happens, that's anything that has any attributes that are similar to that in terms of an external stimuli on the outside, we're going to react very similarly. Somebody yelling at someone else, if we associated our parents fighting or arguing with being a pretty big deal when we were young, any time now as an adult we might that out there in any aspect in the world, we might have this visceral emotional reaction to us on the inside. When I was young, we used to take vacation as a family. I still have this kind of issue today. We got lost one time, and I lived in Idaho. We got lost one time in downtown Oklahoma City, and my dad didn't react to it very well. Now, before I ever go into a city, I make sure exactly where I'm going to go. But if I get lost, and you can ask my wife this, or if I don't know exactly where I'm going to go, I start to have this visceral reaction of emotions that come up around the uncertainty associated with, what the next turn in the street is going to be or where I'm going to go or not having it exactly mapped out, right? So a lot of these things, it's like any change, it's like any growth. You have to go back through them, unearth them, bring them to the surface, understand what they are, reject the irrational, continue to embrace the rational, and program yourself to react in a more appropriate way. And that's, that's not only a foundation to kind of improving your emotional reaction and behavioral reaction to things, but that's really the foundational principle associated with making, in my view, any change.
And you know what? That's wonderful. And it's very logical and reasonable, and you remember the stories, and you understand why you have these hot buttons, and you've described very well how these hot buttons get created. However, often these hot buttons, for some people, get created at a subconscious level, and they don't even realize that this subconscious hot button has been created, so they have an automatic, instantaneous, negative response to events, which are their hot buttons, and they don't even know why. Because whatever the thing is, they've pushed it so far and so deep that they don't have that story that you could say, well, my little brother we forgot him. They just know when certain things happen, they are irrational and they don't act well.
You know what, and that's a really good point, Yvonne. And the thing I like about the cognitive therapy, Dr. Albert Ellis, or Dr. Miller and Tom Miller and his self-discipline, emotional control, is one way that you can work through emotional hot-button issues like that is to dig back as part of the unlearning process. And if you can unearth some of the whys as to why you might be overreacting or why that's a big issue for you, that's great. But the big part of the punchline of that is you don't have to. What you can do with your adult rational mind is sit down and basically say, look, step one, this happens, right? What is the external stimuli? People are arguing, and they have raised voices with each other. That's what happens, number one. Number two, what is my current emotional reaction to that? Well, I get flipped out. I either want to get out of the situation or I want to go confront the people, and my heart's beating about 100 miles an hour, and so then my behavior is either run away or go in, you know, it's just a variant of fight or flight. And then the consequences of that or what happens as a result of that, you know, just depend on the situation. So you can say, well, that's the way it's currently happening today.
Okay.
What Tom Miller did in this program, I think is awesome, is he basically said, hey, look, take a look at that stimuli, but now let's take a look through the rational mind of what it truly is and how you want to react to it through the eyes of an adult rational mind, and then start to practice that and get down the learning curve. You don't necessarily have to dig back to, you know, the emotional headwaters of where that came from. You can just re-script it according to the way you want to react now, and I love that approach.
Good. I do, too. We're close to the end of our program. And I have another question I want to ask you, and then I'd like you to give some final words for our listeners. You mentioned earlier that you have to unlearn stuff. What is unlearning?
Unlearning is basically going in and looking at an existing body of knowledge or a belief system, bringing it from subconsciousness back into consciousness and saying, here it is, and here's what it does, and here's how it works. Compare that to something new in consciousness, and basically do a rational, conscious comparison of the old thing to the new thing. That's the first part of unlearning. The second part is to embrace now what of the new thing you want, either a hybrid of the old thing, or the new thing in its entirety, and then relearning, in the words of Alvin Toffler, is simply practicing that new belief system all the way through habituation. To just kind of wrap a little bow around that, Yvonne, I like to say there are four steps of learning anything that kind of relate to that. Step one is you might read something or go to a class or hear something new, so you get exposed to it. Step two is after you've gone through that conscious process of comparing the old thing to the new thing, you say, this is the new thing I want to do. So you start practicing it. Now, you're going to realize in steps one and two there's going to be resistance. You're going to know it's there, and that, to me, is 80% of the battle. So you push through that resistance until you get to step three, which is start to get down the learning curve. You go through the repetition to make it stick in short-term memory. You practice it. You stick with it. Do a little bit each and every day until you get to step four, which for most adults is 21 to 30 days down the line, and that's habituation of the new thing. Being fluent in the art of continuous transformation is just doing that over and over and over again, given the current rate of change we have in this life. If you can force yourself through that resistance for the things you want to change and be structured and disciplined about working through those four steps of learning and adopting anything new, then you'll become fluent in the art of continuous transformation.
Okay. Do you have some quick final words for our listeners? How can they get in touch with you if they want to?
Now, absolutely. The best way to kind of continue the dialogue and to stay in touch with us as we continue these discussions and put out information that helps you with this process is to go and visit our website at www.soulcanyon.com. That's SOULCANYON.com. And join our email list. Because we're constantly putting out information on the email list and out on our Facebook page. Become our friends, like our page on Facebook, and you'll constantly see some of the things that we can do out there. Also on our website, you're going to see different little tips and tricks and programs that we have out there. to help you with this process. And we always are open to taking a specific email from you, which you can send to rob@soulcanyon.com, or just connect to us via email right there on the website, or connect to us on Facebook, and we can have a custom dialogue right there on those venues.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you very much for the wonderful interview, Rob. And thanks to all of you for listening to the Find Yourself, Live Your Dreams, and Be Happy show. I'm your host, Yvonne Brown, coming to you from Chicago, Illinois. And I'll see you next month on the second Saturday at 2 p.m. Central Time. Until then, I want to leave you with this thought of the day. Sacred and scared are spelled with the same letters. Awful proceeds from the same root word as awesome, terrifying, terrific. Every negative experience holds the seeds of transformation. Alan Cohen said that. So as you decide to go through your own transformation, remember, it's in your own hands. And remember to always join us on the second Saturday each month. In the meantime, visit us online at blogtalkradio.com/Yvonne-F-Brown to share your comments about today's show. While you're there, become a friend of the show and use the comment box to provide us with some feedback. Thanks again, Rob. I really, really enjoyed our interview.
Thank you very much for the opportunity, Ron.
Thank you for joining us today. If you have a topic that you would like to learn more about, please send it to me at yvonne@yvonnefbrown.com. You may also use the contact page at www.yvonnefbrown.com, yvonnefbrown.com. To share your comments about today's program or to ask me a question. Until next time, this is Yvonne Brown saying, each day you have the opportunity to get out there on life's playing field or sit on the sidelines. It's always more rewarding to get in the game and play.